Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On the program today, threat levels rising. Is a Russian attack on Ukraine coming?
There are many contingency plans in place. The safety of Canadian diplomats and their families is, of course, paramount. And we will continue to be there for Ukraine.
Is it time for non-essential embassy staff and their families to leave that country? And should Canada be sending weapons to Ukraine for help? Plus, truckers and the vaccine protest. How big is it really? A convoy of truckers protesting the vaccine rules at the border are headed to Ottawa. Do political leaders support them or the mandate at the border? Truckers say they've raised millions of dollars, but who's behind the money? Are shortages really the cause of these mandates? We'll talk to Conservative leader Erin O'Toole about all these things, and CTV senior political correspondent Glenn McGregor follows the trucker money then. Exclusive new poll numbers on Quebec's plan to tax the unvaxxed. Does it have widespread support? Pollster Nick Nanos is here with new information on that. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. Tensions are rising and militaries are mobilizing as NATO and the European Union move to protect Ukraine from a feared Russian invasion. Up to 8,500 U.S. troops have now been placed on heightened alert to prepare to head to Eastern Europe if necessary. And Denmark is sending a frigate and deploying warplanes to Lithuania. Spain will also send warships and could send fighter jets to Bulgaria. The head of NATO says the alliance will, quote, take all necessary measures to protect and defend all allies. Listen to this.
We have stepped up, but this is defensive. NATO is not threatening Russia. It's proportionate. And at the same time as we step up, we also invite Russia to continue our dialogue.
Canada has a frigate sailing over there as well. We've got, of course, the 200 trainers as part of Operation Unifier on the ground in western Ukraine and special forces there. But the U.S. has now said that all American diplomats and embassy staff in Ukraine have been ordered to leave. Some U.K. staff have also been withdrawn. The European Union is not following that yet. Prime Minister Trudeau said Canada is closely monitoring the situation but won't say what that means for Canadian staff in the country and whether Canada will send Ukraine defensive weapons or any weapons as the Ukraine wants. Is it time for Canada to pull diplomats out of the country and send weapons to Ukraine? To talk about that, also the trucker vaccine protest and the cost of living issues, the Conservative leader Erin O'Toole joins us. Good to have you back on the program, Mr. O'Toole. Should Canada send weapons to Ukraine?
We should continue military assistance in any way our Ukrainian allies feel is helpful. It was the Conservative government that started Operation Unifier. The Trudeau government only reluctantly extended it. And Mr. Trudeau actually took away some of the areas we were sharing, like radar sat, some of the military intelligence we'd been sharing with Ukraine, and they flip-flopped on it. I want to see Canada stand as a strong, determined ally with Ukraine. Canada was the first country in the world to recognize the independent Ukraine under Prime Minister Mulroney. Mr. Harper stood up very strongly to Mr. Putin's aggression in Crimea. Mr. Trudeau doesn't even merit a phone call from President Biden and our allies. So Canada's absence is actually hurting the situation.
To be fair, our foreign affairs minister was just in Kiev, as you know, but can I just get a specific answer? Because I've asked this to the Liberal government as well, and so far they're saying no. Is it time to send weapons? The Brits are sending anti-tank weapons to the Ukrainians. Should Canada do the same, send some kind of weapons?
We need to send things that can help Ukraine stand up towards this aggression. We started this years ago, Evan, sending non-lethal aid 7-8 years ago, sharing radar sat and other data. If our Ukrainian allies need more, need things to actually repel an attack or save lives, we should provide what equipment we can. We're a strong ally. Canada's a founding member of NATO. And really, our support for Ukraine has flip-flopped under Justin Trudeau over the years. We've been consistent. Give our allies what we need and make sure that we work with our NATO allies to send a clear signal against Mr. Putin's aggression.
Okay, just last thing on this. The Russian ambassador to Canada, Oleg Stepanov, told me on Power Play last week that Russia doesn't care about Western sanctions anymore. He said they don't have any impact. Should Canada right now impose stronger sanctions, either financial sanctions on Russia or personal sanctions like Magnitsky-style sanctions?
Yes. In fact, the Magnitsky sanction tool was something that originated with a private member motion from a member of the Conservative caucus. We've supported their extension to not only people in Russia, but other countries where it can be used as a tool to sanction those that are benefiting from destabilizing global peace and security. So it's an important tool, but so is RADARSAT, so is OPUNIFIER, so is Canadian assistance, any way we can be there for our friends in Ukraine.
Should diplomatic staff be sent home?
I think if global affairs can't assure the safety of its own personnel, that we should look at plans to make sure that we can help our staff on the ground, but also Canadians that may be at risk there. As you know, Evan, Canada has one of the largest Ukrainian diasporas in the world. We have a very strong link, free trade and a number of a close alignment with Ukraine. We've got to stand with them through this really challenging time and stand with our NATO allies. And I really worry that Mr. Trudeau isn't even part of the conversation with these allies anymore, despite the photo op trip of the minister.
Well, okay, again, $120 million in a loan was given, and we've got the 200 troops still. That has not been extended, that mission, as you say, and a frigate's on the way. Let me go to another issue, which is the convoy of truckers that you've heard about this. They're heading to Ottawa. They've raised about $3 million, and now maybe $3.5 million. They're protesting the vaccine mandate at the border. Both the U.S. and Canada require that cross-border truckers have a vaccine. The Canadian Trucking Alliance says they do not support this convoy. A number of your high-profile MPs have openly supported them, saying, quote, let our truckers drive, restore freedom for all, and reverse the mandate requiring them to get a vaccine. Let me ask you, does the Conservative Party support the mandate that requires cross-border truckers to be vaccinated, yes or no?
We put forward a plan on this almost a month ago, Evan, that you can support vaccines, but you can also make sure you address the supply chain shortage. We were already short thousands of truckers before COVID. Now we're going to be short tens of thousands, and these are families that will be put out. And what's disappointing, Evan, is a couple of years ago, before we had vaccines, we hailed truckers, we hailed grocery store workers, those essential workers as heroes. And now we've allowed our debate on these issues to become so polarized, so divisive. That's been Mr. Trudeau's approach, as opposed to actually saying, how can we tackle these critical supply chain shortages while having public health be at the top of the list as well?
Okay,
so I understand the frustration with the Trudeau government's ignoring of the issue.
Okay, so the U.S. has the exact same mandate. So both the Biden administration and the Trudeau government require cross-border truckers to be vaccinated. You're saying you do not support that. You would reverse the vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers. Is that fair to say you would reverse the vaccine mandate?
What I said 3 weeks ago, Evan, and you know, you covered the press conference.
But I'm just trying to say, what are you saying today?
Every trucker to get vaccinated. But we can also address the supply chain shortages without 10,000 pink slips. We've got to use everything in our toolbox to make sure that we tackle the supply chain shortage, because if there's shortage of goods, Evan, the price goes up, and we've already got inflation at 5%. We've already got 60% of Canadians worried about paying their grocery bills. So this is leadership. Dividing the population is not working. We've got to come up with real solutions for a country that is tired of hollow words from Justin Trudeau for 2 years, and we're still in lockdown in the fifth wave of the pandemic.
Okay, so just on leadership, I'm just trying to figure out who people should listen to in terms of your party. So again, you've got one MP saying reverse the mandate. I'm not sure if you support that or not. Your finance critic calls the Canadian rule that cross-border truckers and the U.S. rule need it. He calls it a vaccine vendetta that is leading to higher grocery prices. So what is a vaccine vendetta in my mind, if you could tell me that? And is that your position as well, that this is a vaccine vendetta and you believe the mandate is somehow punishing truckers and contributing to food shortages? Is that the Conservative Party's position?
We need solutions to actually get products on shelves and not have tens of thousands of people lose their home, lose their livelihood, Evan. Polarizing this debate has not worked. Mr. Trudeau knows that. So 3 weeks ago, we proposed a solution that would solve the supply chain shortage. The Trudeau government, about 10 days ago, looked like they were actually going to follow what we recommended, what the Chamber of Commerce, what most of the small business organizations have all supported, Evan. And you can do that while encouraging all the top healthcare provisions to be provided for, including encouraging vaccination. We need to make sure we tackle the cost of living crisis and the supply chain shortage. Weeks ago, Mr. Trudeau was blaming inflation on supply chain shortages. Now he's making it worse.
Okay, so let's get a couple things on the table if I can. These truckers are going to come. They got support of your high-profile MPs. They support these people to reverse the mandate. Will you meet these truckers? Will you go out and support these truckers when they arrive in Ottawa?
Well, as I said 3 weeks ago, Evan, we've been meeting with industry for the last 2 months, and I will continue to meet with industry and individual truckers throughout this week and into the weekend, because people are advocating because they're losing their jobs, they're losing their livelihoods, and they want to make sure that they're heard. As I said, this is what Canadians are a bit tired of, Evan. 2 years ago, we were calling essential workers heroes. Now we're allowing the whole debate to become demonized, neighbor against neighbor, when there are ways we can tackle these shortages without dividing the country.
I'm just trying to get a straight answer, because it seems like your MPs are very clear. They say, I don't support the trucker mandate. I know you're talking about what you said 3 weeks ago. I'm just asking you today. And you're talking about clarity. I mean, you know, your transport critic, Melissa Lantzman, said there's a connection between the trucker mandate and empty grocery shelves. You know, she tweeted out a picture that this picture here, this is not a Canadian shelf. This, we found this, as everyone did, called on iStock. It was from Britain. It's a fake picture, as you know. So it's not actually a reflection of what's going on. So to get clarity, have you talked to Melissa Lantzman about tweeting out fake pictures, your own MP? And just, look, I just want it on the record. Do you support getting rid of the border mandate, yes or no?
Evan, 3 weeks ago, as you know, I proposed a different solution other than the mandate to tackle the supply chain shortage and to make sure that thousands of people weren't put out of work at a time we need them on the roads. We are highlighting the same issues that the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, that most of the business groups in Canada are showing Canadians. There's already out of control inflation. Right. If we continue to see supply chain shortages from semiconductors right through to food, it's going to drive up inflation even more at a time that Canadians are already falling behind. So leadership's about putting out real solutions. Mr. Trudeau didn't even get a question on this today, Evan. This is a crisis, and Canadians deserve to be heard by their government.
Okay. So you won't. So the truckers show up. If Mr. Trudeau was here, I'd ask him the same question, just for the record. If the truckers show up on Parliament Hill, sir, will you meet them, or yes or no?
We've been meeting with them for the last few months, and I will continue to meet this week and into the weekend with truckers and with the industry, both individual people suffering, but also the industry. Right. 3 weeks ago, Evan,
but I'm talking about the convoy. I'm talking about the so-called freedom
this
convoy.
This problem, which would actually tackle the supply chain shortage. Mr. Trudeau's making inflation worse through his overspending, through his lack of attention on issues like the shortages, and with the fact that he's continuing to just divide people and not deliver on the essential things we need in this pandemic.
I want to get to cost of living, but one last question. I want to flip back to something, because we've got word that the government is reporting there is a cyber incident involving Global Affairs Canada that took place apparently on January the 19th. Some internal-based services are currently unavailable, so they're concerned about that. There was a warning, by the way, about Russia behind these things. How concerned are you about future cyber attacks? And what do you think happened here? Was this Russia?
Very concerned. And there's a track record of Russia doing this with respect to Ukraine, disrupting from a cyber basis, even disrupting their electricity grid We need to make sure we have our systems reinforced. In the election, Evan, part of our plan was to increase our readiness both on the cyber front and to make sure we have more sovereignty protection in our north, two areas that the Trudeau government has literally been asleep at the switch on.
Okay. Today you called on the Prime Minister to reverse the hike of the Canadian pension plan contribution rate. You said it would save the average family about $700 a year. As you know well, sir, the increase is part of an agreement between the provinces and the federal government. It's based on a formula. If the government to stop it, the government would need not only a parliamentary vote, but seven provinces representing two-thirds of the population to reverse it. I guess my point is that even a realistic option, sir?
Absolutely, because several of the provinces have already acknowledged that the cost of living crisis we're in right now means we shouldn't be starting off the year raising payroll taxes of any kind, and you can stop it with the participation of the provinces. So for the average family, Evan, $700 at a time they've seen gas go up 30%, housing, both renting and buying, up over 20%, food go up, they need a break, and this is one small measure that would help. You could either cancel it or pause it until we don't have this crisis.
Right. One argument to raise it, they say, and this is what Finance Canada says, they said the contribution raise, which does cost businesses, employees, I understand that, but it would be raising the retirement pension for workers by 50% eventually, and it would be the youngest people now who are the farthest from retirement would benefit most down the road. Do you not disagree with that, that this is helping young people make sure they have something for their retirement?
Actually, I took part in the debate on this, Evan, and this is going to help only a small number of people 40 years from now. But families, millions of them need help now. The polls have shown 60% of Canadian families are worried about their grocery bill each month. So how can we make sure we provide immediate help? I think $700 for an average family would be meaningful. I also think getting groceries on shelves and dealing with the supply chain shortage would also keep a downward pressure on prices. Mr. Trudeau, starting the year with an inflation crisis, raising taxes, and I think that's inherently wrong.
Right. You know, contributing to CPP is all about protecting the future 40 years. So now the people that did it 25 years ago are going to help pay for your retirement and mine. That's the point. But on the inflation issue, I spoke to an economist named David McDonald. Now he's from the Center for Policy Alternatives. He argued that raising the CPP contribution will cool inflation. He told me, quote, higher CPP premiums takes money out of the economy right now, as you're saying, by the way, but it reduces inflation as both businesses and workers will have less money to spend, but it's doing something very useful by increasing retirement security. It's an investment in retirement. So he's saying it actually might reduce inflation and help people save. What is your response to that?
That's incorrect. Right now, there's people that need, cash flow in their daily life, Evan. They need that $400 in their family at a time that everything is going up. They may not even be part of the equation that benefits 40 years from now. And what we can do, since many of the provinces have indicated they're willing to work with the federal government on this, let's provide some relief to families right now. And then you can handle the issue with respect to CPP and financial security in the future for Canadians later. They need some help right now, and there's a willingness on the part of many provinces to work on it. There's just no willingness on the part of Mr. Trudeau to give Canadians a break.
All right. You've been great with your time today, Conservative Party leader Aaron O'Toole. I really appreciate you joining us. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Evan.
Okay, so that's Mr. O'Toole on lots of issues, and it's great to have him back. Coming up, you just heard what he had to say about a number of issues. Earlier this month, though, he raised some eyebrows when he suggested Canada needs to accommodate the unvaccinated. Well, a new Nanos poll exclusive to CTV's Power Play shows that a majority of Canadians are in favor of fining the unvaccinated. So what do people think about the Quebec proposal? Pollster Nick Nanos has some exclusive new numbers next. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. As unvaccinated truckers are set to roll into the Capitol to protest the Vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers. By the way, the U.S. has it and Canada has it. Quebec has yet to finalize how they'll roll out their tax on those who refuse a COVID-19 vaccine, the so-called tax on the unvaxxed. The province is set to table legislation in the National Assembly next month. Details on the financial penalty are still very thin. Other premiers were quick to clarify they have no plans to bring their own version of the vax tax in. But the premiers may want to consider that after they look at the latest public opinion numbers. According to an exclusive new Nanos research poll for CTV's PowerPlay, about 3 in 5 Canadians support or somewhat support the idea of a provincial government forcing eligible unvaccinated residents to pay somehow for a new health contribution or a tax. That's about 60% of respondents. So with more Canadians in favor of this kind of financial penalty, does that have implications, for example, on the trucker convoy that they call the Freedom Protest? And who supports that and the politics of that? Pollster Nick Nanos of Nanos Research is here to break down the numbers. Okay, Nick, first of all, Happy New Year, my friend. It's been a while. Talk about the support for Quebec's tax on the unvaxxed. Seemed controversial. How does it test?
Well, you know, the thing is, it is controversial, but the fact of the matter, Evan, is that about 6 out of every 10 or 3 out of 5 Canadian supporters somewhat support this. We should not dismiss that around 37% oppose or somewhat oppose. But the kicker is the generational changes, differences, and the regional differences. If you happen to be in Quebec, Ontario, and Atlantic Canada, you're more likely to support or somewhat support either a fine or some type of levy if for those that are voluntarily unvaccinated. But if you are in Western Canada, including British Columbia, you're less likely to support. The biggest difference is generational. I think this is critical from a political perspective. Only 50% of Canadians that are under 35 years of age support this or somewhat support this, while it jumps up to 72% or more than 7 out of every 10 for seniors.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. Is it just because people in that age bracket may have had surgeries bumped and there's, again, that disproportionate number of beds in ICUs and hospitals taken up by the unvaccinated?
I think that's at play. The other thing that's at play is that we're talking about whether you call it a tax, a levy, a fine, whatever it is. You know, the fact of the matter is that if you happen to be under 35 years of age, it's just another expense for you. And you're just looking at it as an expense or an expense that your friends or neighbors can't afford.
If you're looking at that kind of support, how does that play as, you know, I just had Aaron O'Toole on the program. Politicians are going to be asked, do you support this convoy of truckers? Again, the Canadian Association of Truckers don't support this, but these are truckers who do not want to be vaccinated, maybe about 10% of truckers, but they're calling themselves or styling themselves as some kind of freedom convoy. Does that poll inform how politicians ought to respond to this kind of movement?
Well, I think they have to respond very respectfully to this type of movement, because the fact of the matter is there's still a significant proportion that oppose this. But, you know, the other thing, Evan, and this is when we get into what I'll say bare knuckle politics, the fact of the matter is that older Canadians tend to vote more than younger Canadians, which means that for those individuals that are more likely to vote, they're probably more likely to support this. This is probably the calculus that Premier Legault is probably playing in the province of Quebec, and perhaps other premiers might, because the fact of the matter is if young people are less likely to support this, they're also less likely to vote. So the best way for them to kind of punch above their weight is to get out there and vote, because right now there's a significant generational divide on this one.
Okay, let's talk about voting. It's not like the Liberals with their position on vaccines or the Conservatives done them much good, certainly the Liberals. In your ballot poll, the Conservative Party are slightly ahead of the Liberals now. Support for the CPC, 28.5%. The Liberals, 28.2%. The NDP, 24.3%. The Greens, 6.3%. The People's Party, 6.1%. The Bloc, 5.3%. So what do these neck and neck numbers tell you?
It tells us it's ugly out there if you're a Liberal or Conservative. You know, the fact of the matter is we have a statistical tie factoring the margin of error for the Conservatives and the Liberals. So it's not really a big Conservative lead. However, this is basically a damning indictment on the two front-running parties. I think people are fed up with the two front-running parties. I think they're frustrated at the pandemic. And I think what they want to hear is less bickering and more solutions. They don't want to hear about who's responsible. They want to hear about a path forward and how people can have more certainty in their lives in terms of their kids going to school, showing up to work, and kind of having some type of more normal life.
I think I said 28.5 for the Conservatives, it's 29.5. I know it's a statistical tie, but hey, numbers matter. Just last thing, if I can, could Mr. O'Toole there, I'm trying to pin him down on his view on the unvaccinated or not, and does he support vaccine mandates? And it seems to be we have to just accommodate the unvaccinated some way. How does that play out?
Well, it plays out significantly, you know, because the thing is the People's Party is still at around 6% nationally. So O'Toole's looking over his right shoulder. But you know what? Those NDP numbers jump. If the NDP are at 22, that's bad news for the Liberals because that'll mean vote splitting. That changes the calculus when it comes to converting popular support into seats. And it's bad news for the Liberals. So how about this, Evan? Bad news for the Conservatives, bad news for the Liberals, perhaps good news for the NDP if they can take advantage of this situation.
I like how you first said it. It's ugly out there. People, let's just say it. People are fed up. That's just what you're saying. The message is everyone's tired. It's winter. We're sick of this whole thing. Doesn't matter what side you're on. Nick Nanos, luckily we have you to cheer us all up. Founder and chief data scientist at Nanos Research. Thanks, brother.
Take it easy.
Okay, coming up, we'll dig into those trucker protests again.
I'm not against vaccines at all. I'm against being told that you will do it or you will lose your job. That's my problem.
Raising over $3 million along the way, where does the trucker convoy money lead? CTV's Glenn McGregor follows the money on an 18-wheeler next. Stay with us.
Regulation is not changing, so as an industry, we must adapt and comply with this mandate. The only way to cross the border in a commercial truck or any other vehicle is to get vaccinated.
The Canadian Truckers Alliance do not support this convoy of trucks that's on its way to Ottawa. They say to fight the vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers, both the U.S. and Canada have the same requirement that cross-border truckers must be vaccinated, or else they got to take tests. They can't just fly across the border. But that convoy is raising more than just national attention. A GoFundMe page has raised millions of dollars, more than 3.6 at last count. But what's behind that? And is this really causing grocery stores' shelves to be empty? Well, we decided to dig in with CTV National News correspondent Glenn McGregor is here, our senior political correspondent. Glenn, let's start with this GoFundMe page. It calls itself the Freedom Convoy 2022. They've raised like $3.6 million. Who's behind it and where's the money going?
Yeah, it's an enormously successful GoFundMe campaign in just over a week. It's, as you say, up over $3.5 million, 43,000 donors from around the world, a lot of them giving very small amounts. So it does have the appearance of being a very much a grassroots movement. You look a little closer, who's behind it? Well, it's a woman named Tamara Leach. We don't know much about her other than the fact that she is not really affiliated with the trucking industry, but she is a member of the board of directors of the Maverick Party. That's that spinoff of the Wexit movement, the Western separatist movement that cropped up in Alberta a few years ago. And there is a very much a tone in the people who are involved in the organization of the convoy. It is really kind of much more than just a protest against the vaccine mandate, which, as you've been discussing on your show, of course, applies in both directions on the border. It's whether Canada has the mandate in place or not is kind of moot at this point because truckers traveling into the United States have to be fully vaccinated as well. But it's really become this convoy kind of an expression of frustration with vaccine mandates in general, with mask mandates, with lockdowns, and just kind of a general sense of anger at the Trudeau government in particular. So it's very much kind of reflective of some of the roots of some of the people who are involved in organizing it. Now, we've learned this in the last day that because of that big dollar value of money that's sitting in that GoFundMe account, GoFundMe has actually kind of put it in a temporary hold on that money, and they're not letting it being distributed to what the organizers say will be to defray the cost of diesel fuel for the truckers who are driving across the country, as well as food and lodging where they require it. So GoFundMe is very sensitive to the issue of transparency and making sure that, as they say, the generosity of their donors isn't exploited. So they want more documentation from the organizers about exactly where this money is going to go. They want to see a plan. Apparently that's in negotiation. Tamara Leach, she hasn't returned our calls, but she's said on Facebook that she's has people talking to GoFundMe to make sure that process is in place. But in the meantime, she's taking donations by email. And I tried seeing how that would work if I sent from my bank account a small donation to the email account that they listed. And it turns out it returns the name of a bank account that's got her name on it. So it's all a little bit mysterious at this point. And so we're seeing if we can get some more transparency, Evan, on exactly how this money is being used.
That is interesting. Glenn, okay, so as you say, this convoy is more than just about one thing. It's like an 18-wheel vehicle of discontent, and it's storing a lot of stuff in those trucks. One of them is this mandate is contributing to grocery store shortages, and political parties and people are lobbying back and forth on Twitter. Photos of bare shelves. We saw the conservative transport critic Melissa Lantzman tweeting this out, and we can show it to you. This tweet here, this was, of course, a picture that she showed. It's a fake shelf. That's a stock image from England. The premier of Alberta tweeted out pictures showing empty shelves, but one of those pictures boasted a shelf that said 100% Canadian meat. In other words, it wouldn't be cross-border at all. What do you mean?
Presumably coming
stuff
from Alberta, right? As the premier of Alberta knows, they tend to produce a fair bit of beef, Canadian beef in Alberta. You'd think that that meat that's coming to those shelves that he's reporting are empty would not have crossed even an interprovincial border, much less the Canada-U.S. border. So look, I mean, there's a lot of this going on. We've seen a lot of this on Twitter, people posting these pictures. Clearly, there are problems with the supply chain. What we don't know is what percentage of those problems are attributable to this vaccine mandate at the Canada-U.S. border. So for products that are produced in Canada, we're seeing shortages of those in some places. Part of that could be people being off sick with Omicron infections. Part of it could be the weather we had recently. We've seen in Atlantic Canada a lot of empty shelves there because they had a huge snowstorm that basically shut down some warehouses. So there's lots of those things at play. But also, produce coming from Mexico and South and Central America into Canada, keep in mind that has to cross over the Mexico-U.S. border, where it faces the vaccine mandate imposed by the Biden administration before it can even get anywhere close to the Canadian border. So that could also be a factor, too. Mm. My source is telling me at Canadian Border Services Agency that the numbers really are kind of comparable right now in terms of truck traffic in those few days after the vaccine mandate came into effect last Saturday. They're pretty much about the same as they were for the same time period back in 2019. So whether or not this vaccine mandate actually is really contributing all that much to the supply chain, we'll have to see on that.
All right. We'll be digging into that and watching our shelves closely. Glenn McGregor, thanks for following the trucking money. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Coming up on Vaccinated Truckers, as we're just talking about, are heading to Ottawa. NATO is sending ships and supplies to Ukraine. Two crises. How's Ottawa going to handle it? The Press Gallery is going to dig into that next. Stay right here with Power Play. So is this mandate to vaccinate cross-border truckers causing shortages? Will that change? We've just got word that the transport minister, Omar Al-Gabra, is about to jump on this program when he's out of a government meeting. I think it's a cabinet meeting. So I will save some space there. But in the meantime, the situation in Ukraine is escalating. There are NATO allies are genuinely concerned that Russia will invade. And so you've got NATO allies sending weapons there and putting militaries on standby. What should Canada do? Should Canada send weapons? Should Canada pull its diplomats out? To talk about that and more, the Press Gallery is here. Tana McCharles, senior reporter with the Toronto Star's Ottawa Bureau is here. And so is Ian Bailey, reporter with the Globe and Mail's Ottawa Bureau. And he writes the wonderful Globe Daily Politics Briefing. Good Monday to you. Tonda, let's start on Ukraine. Canada, of course, is sending a frigate. We've got 200 troops there as Operation Unifier. and we've given a loan of $120 million that can't be used for weapons. Should Canada be doing more?
Well, I mean, to hear Conservative leader Erin O'Toole speak about it, Canada should do whatever Ukraine wants it to do. But I don't think that's going to happen. Look, Canada may well send more materiel, and we've reported that last week, that, in fact, there is going to be an announcement soon that they will be prepared to contribute more military assistance by way of night vision goggles, you know, vests, kind of protective materiel. But the question of whether Canada is ready to commit, bigger armored personnel, carriers or anti-tank, any weaponry, I think these are very fraught questions for Canada. I think that Canadian politicians are worried about being drawn into a broader conflict, and I don't expect that to happen. Canada will, of course, probably increase its contribution to the multilateral NATO deployment and operations in the area, but from that to say that Canadian troops would take an offensive role there, I don't think so.
Yeah, and Ian, Tonda's right, they may do non-lethal weapons, but Ukraine has specifically requested any help, including lethal weapons.
Yeah, I think we're a long way away from weapons going from Canada to the Ukraine. Today, the Prime Minister was asked about diplomats and sort of removing diplomats from the Ukraine, and he was very cautious in what he, in his words, very, very specific in his words, and not even going very far in terms of talking about that. I think Canada's taking a very cautious path, and looking at what Mr. Trudeau has been saying in the last little while, very cautious, very slow, very meticulous in sort of going ahead on this. So I don't think we're going to see weapons going there anytime soon. It's a really tricky situation, and it's hard to know where this is going, although it certainly seems to be going towards some kind of Russian military action in the Ukraine.
Yeah, and what are the let's say there is, there's two scenarios. This is a bluff. No one really understands what Putin wants. Maybe he's trying to destabilize Tonda. On the other hand, maybe there is an incursion into the eastern Ukraine. They've done that before in the Donbass. They already support Russian-backed troops there. Maybe he decides to take another chunk of Ukraine like he did with the Crimean Peninsula. Then what does Canada have to respond in some other way?
Look, this is a huge challenge for the whole West, for the international community, for the broader NATO coalition in Europe and in North America. Joe Biden last week said this potentially is the biggest threat since World War II to global peace and stability. It's a massive, massive challenge, and Canada and the Canadian government has to think of every step that they make, whether it's weighing on the escalation side of the balance or the de-escalation diplomatic side of the balance. Even if Canada is one of the most vocal supporters of Ukraine in the NATO alliance right now, first of all, we don't have a whole lot to give, and we're pretty far away from the action. But second of all, how does that affect our ability to actually match our words and rhetoric with action, with resources? I think it's massive, and I think that they're discussing it at the three-day cabinet retreat this week. I think we might get an announcement on another level of assistance, but I think this is a long ways from being solved or worked out.
Both of you, I got the transport minister just about to show up, and I'm going to ask him about this trucking convoy and the vaccine mandate at the border that both the Americans and the Canadians have. Ian, what's the challenge for the government on this, or maybe for the opposition on this? Ian.
I think there are big challenges for both of them. I think this is going to bring the issue of supply chains, the concerns about vaccine mandates for truckers, literally to the doorstep of Parliament, front door of Parliament. And the government will have to face questions on it, as Mr. O'Toole is going to face questions on this issue before joining you tonight. I'm seeing tweets from his caucus members that are, shall we say, sharper and more vocal than his tweets. He's going to be facing questions about this as his party has a national caucus meeting in Ottawa this week. And here's a report on the performance in the last election. So for both the government, I think, and for Mr. O'Toole, this presents a huge political challenge.
I'll give you the last word, Todd. I couldn't pin Mr. O'Toole down on what he...
No, you couldn't, but who can?
But you go ahead.
Well, you couldn't pin him down, but it's because he's not pinnable on it. It brings to the fore all of his contradictions over vaccines and vaccinations over the last mandates, specifically over the last several months. But look, I mean, it is a challenge, as Ian says, for the government, because, and the stakes are pretty high, not just because there's this pressure from the either anti-vax vaccine sort of segment of a population or from vaccine hesitant, but there are credible large business organizations in the country that are now saying to the prime minister, look, you have to give time to make this thing work. It's not going to work. It is going to increase the supply chain problems in our country. So mm-hmm. those are real concerns that he has to weigh.
Good news is we can ask the transport minister in about 2 minutes.
You can.
Tonda and Ian, great to have you on the program. And we'll find out if they'll reconsider that mandate at all and if it's leading to shortages. So thanks to Tonda and Ian. Omar Al-Gaber, the transport minister, is on the other side of a break. We'll get to him in just 2 minutes. Stay right here with Power Play. Okay, so the big issue right now is this convoy of truckers who've raised millions of dollars. They're heading to Ottawa. They don't like the vaccine mandate that requires cross-border truckers to be vaccinated. It's a policy for Canada, and it's a policy for the U.S. Is it leading to shortages, as some claim? Should these people be accommodated, as Erin O'Toole, the leader of the Conservative Party, who was on this program, said, you know what, it's going to lead to supply chain shortages, so stop doing it and reverse it. Let's ask the Transport Minister, Omar Al-Gabra, who's now just, I think he's just left cabinet, so he's jumping on. Conservative politicians, sir, and welcome to the program, are showing photos of empty grocery shelves, some of them, by the way, not even from Canada, but that's another issue that we've already taken up. Is your government at all prepared, given concerns about inflation, grocery prices, and shortages, to maybe reverse the cross-border mandate?
Evan, thank you for having me on your show. Let me start off by saying that there isn't a single person that we know or ourselves who have not experienced supply chains challenges over the last couple of months or couple of years. We all know that there have been that COVID-19 has made an impact on supply chain. There are long-standing issues, global and domestic. And undoubtedly that COVID is the root cause of this. So what we are doing and what we've been doing over the last year and a half is managing the COVID crisis to the best of our ability to support Canadians, to support the Canadian businesses, to support our economy, and to ensure that we get out of this pandemic as quickly as possible. And that includes, as most public health experts agree, vaccines. Vaccines are our best way out of the pandemic, and we have gradually over the last 6 or 7 months been rolling out vaccine requirements throughout our supply chain network. We started with travelers first. We exempted truckers at the time, but we started with border travelers, people who crossed the borders. We then moved on to implement it for our rail, marine, and air sector. And then last November, we announced that we are going to implement it for truck drivers who are crossing the borders, just like also the U.S. is announcing. So this approach is to protect supply chains, Evan, is to protect workers within
but
supply chains.
I only have 3 minutes with you. I just want to understand, but I understand that. But a lot of people are saying, look, inflation's worse than it's ever been. Supply chains are as tight as they've ever been. So why not just delay this? You've had this exemption for truckers. Why don't you just extend the exemption now so people don't have higher prices for products and the supply chains aren't disrupted? Just move it to accommodate people. Is there any sense that you might do that?
So, Evan, first of all, we're not sitting idle in not responding to the supply chains issue. I'm hosting a summit next week that will bring key stakeholders on supply chains issues. We want to fix labor shortages and other infrastructure issues. Having said that, it boils down to this. If you believe that vaccines are our best way out of the pandemic, if you believe vaccines are the best way to deal with absenteeism and infection rates and hospitalization rate, why would you want to delay that even further? Truckers have done their part. More than 90% of them are fully vaccinated. and they've been, you know, there for Canadians. So now is the time to encourage those who are the remaining truck drivers who have not been vaccinated to get vaccinated, because we know this is actually a solution to the supply chains issue, not a hindrance. It's the so why would you delay that if you believe it's a solution to supply chains issue?
Okay, so you're not going to budge. I got about 90 seconds here, so just real quick. When these truckers show up on Parliament Hill, what is your message to these unvaccinated truckers?
Look, I want to thank all truck drivers for serving Canadians. They've stepped up. They ensured that our shelves are packed. They've ensured that the products that Canadians want are there. And I want to thank all of them who've stepped up and gotten vaccinated. I want to encourage those who have been not been vaccinated yet to get vaccinated. Every Canadian has a right to oppose a policy. I encourage people to have a rational debate about this. A rational discussion, but it is the right thing to do for our supply chains, and it's the right thing to do for Canada.
Okay. You know, there's a situation in Ukraine's unfolding. As the transport minister, is Canada preparing airlifts in the case that Canadians need to be evacuated from Ukraine?
Evan, obviously the situation in Ukraine is very, very challenging and important. We're preoccupied by it. My colleagues, Minister Joly and Minister Anand and Minister Sajjan, are working on this. From a Transport Canada perspective, last week we issued a NOTAM, a notice to airmen, to encourage operators from avoiding certain airspace over the area of high tension. We will continue to monitor the situation. We want to ensure that we have safe skies, but we also want to ensure that Ukraine maintains its sovereignty and its independence.
Okay. I got to leave it there because we're at the end of our program, but I really appreciate you jumping on at the end. Transport Minister Omar Al-Gharba, thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thanks, Evan.
Okay, so there you've got both sides on the trucker mandate, and we'll be watching that situation in Ukraine very closely. That is your Power Play Day in Politics, though. Thank all of you for watching. We will be back here in 23 short hours. Hug your loved ones. Have a great evening. See you tomorrow.